All the Quiet Witnesses. This is a heated rivalry fanfic written by Hachiko, read by Princess Moonlight. Author's summary: Ilya Rozanov and Shane Hollander think they are being subtle. They are not. A series of outsider POVs from taxi drivers to hot dog vendors who all independently come to the same conclusion. Author's notes: I had this idea that Shane and Ilya were not really very discreet, even when they tried to be. So here are a few POVs from random people who witnessed their secret love. This fic is marked complete, but I might add more chapters in the future. Feel free to subscribe if you'd like a notification when that happens. Chapter 1. Taxi driver. Henry had been driving a taxi in Ottawa for almost 30 years, long enough to know that airports brought out the truth in people. They stripped people down to their essentials. You could tell who someone was by the way they waited. Stress, relief, anticipation, sometimes all at once. He had seen businessmen arguing with ghosts on Bluetooth headsets, already half on the next call. Families clustered together, eyes flicking constantly to the arrivals board, children vibrating with excitement or exhaustion. Angry people, crying over delayed flights. Lovers, lovers were the easiest. They clung to each other like they might disappear if they let go. Or sometimes they hovered near the sliding doors, pretending to be casual while checking their phones every 30 seconds. That was the fun part of the job. Stories you only ever saw for 5 minutes, already halfway written before you arrived. Henry liked that about the airport. He preferred the airport route these days. It was close to his place for one thing, and the work was steady. He didn't have to deal with late-night drunks or construction detours. Just arrivals, departures, and the quiet satisfaction of being a small part of someone else's story. He pulled into the free waiting area and shifted the car into park. He glanced automatically at the arrivals app on his phone, tapping his fingers against the steering wheel. Air Canada flight AC 8923 from Boston to Ottawa was due to arrive at any minute now. On time for once. He smiled faintly. That was rare enough to count as a good omen. As he waited, he noticed the car parked beside him. Definitely not a taxi. A rental, maybe, or someone picking up a friend. The driver was a young man, mid-20s, sitting too straight in his seat, hands gripping the steering wheel like it might try to escape. Henry watched him out of the corner of his eye. The man checked the mirror, adjusted his collar, ran a hand through his hair, stopped, frowned, checked again. At one point, Henry nearly laughed out loud when the guy leaned forward and checked his teeth. Ah, first date energy. He had seen that exact brand of nerves more times than he could count. First dates, long-distance reunions, proposals sometimes, people about to step into a moment they had been imagining for weeks, months, years. Airport romance. It was his favorite kind. The nervous excitement, the hope. This one looked particularly far gone, bouncing his knee, wiping his palms on his jeans. His eyes were constantly flicking towards the terminal doors. He smiled sadly at nothing, then seemed to catch himself and pressed his lips together, as if embarrassed by his own excitement. Henry leaned back in his seat, imagination already spinning. Boston girl then. That made sense. AC-8923 was coming in from Boston, after all. Maybe they had met online. Facebook groups, perhaps. Gaming forum. His own son spent hours yelling into a headset, falling in love with strangers halfway across the continent, laughing at jokes Henry didn't understand. Love happened in stranger places these days. Though, the man looked pretty athletic. Broad shoulders, easy posture beneath the nerves. Let's go with a yoga retreat then. That's fun. Yes, California. Sunsets, shared smoothies, bare feet on wooden decks. They had bonded over downward dog and meaningful glances. Promise to visit. Promises kept, apparently. Cute. Henry sighed contentedly. He liked making up lives for strangers. It made his job feel full instead of empty while he waits. The arrival's doors slid open, releasing a small flood of passengers. Henry watched idly, waiting for the usual wave of customers scanning the parking area for taxis. He was so lost in the story that he almost missed the tall, blonde man hurrying across the curb from the terminal, dragging a carry-on behind him. Broad shoulders, long stride, scanning the parking lot like he already knew exactly who he was looking for. The moment his gaze landed on the car beside Henry's, oh, well, not a Boston yoga girl after all. The nervous man in the car noticed at the same time. His entire posture transformed. The tension drained out of him so fast it was almost startling. He was smiling before he even opened the door. He didn't bother closing it. He just stepped out and stood there, thumbs shoved into his jeans pockets, like he didn't trust his hands not to give him away. The blonde man broke into a grin so wide it felt indecent to witness. He abandoned his suitcase entirely, letting it topple onto its side as he crossed the remaining distance in long strides. They stopped at an arm's length apart. For half a second, just one, they hesitated. Then the blonde man laughed, low and breathless, and pressed his forehead briefly against the other's, hands coming up automatically, like this was muscle memory. Like they'd done it 100 times before. Henry looked away politely, not because he was embarrassed, because some moments deserved privacy, even if they happened in the middle of an airport parking lot. When he glanced back, the two men were talking over each other, smiling, touching casually, hand on arm, shoulder bump, fingers brushing like it meant nothing at all, except it very clearly meant everything. The nervous man retrieved the fallen suitcase, rolling it toward the car while the blonde man followed close behind, saying something that made the other laugh again. They didn't kiss. That was what struck Henry the most. They didn't kiss, even though the urge was written all over them. Instead, they hovered in that charged, careful space people occupied when they knew they were being watched, but couldn't quite stop themselves from reaching out anyway. Henry understood that too. Some loves like to stay quiet. The blonde man slid into the passenger seat of the car beside him, still smiling, still talking. The nervous man, no longer nervous at all, started the engine, glancing over at him with a look that made Henry's chest ache unexpectedly. Not new love then. Old love. the kind that survived distance, schedules, long silences and longer waits. Henry pulled out of the waiting area as a couple of new passengers approached his cab. He greeted them warmly, helped with their bags, and merged back into traffic. As he drove away from the airport, he caught one last glimpse of the other car in his rearview mirror, turning onto the highway. He smiled to himself. Whatever their story was, he hoped they had a good time in Ottawa. He always had a soft spot for romance. End of chapter 1. I happened to come upon this lovely story from a random reply on a post on X about all the people who knew about Holonov and kept it a secret over the years until their combined moment of discovery when things became official. I am so glad that I have read all these witnesses' POVs and found this story to be one of the greatest comfort reads ever. It has about 40 chapters at present, and even though the story is marked as complete, the author's recent update carried a note where it was stated that further chapters, POVs, would be added on as and when the inspiration strikes. Each chapter happens to be an independent story, short and sweet. And rather than me recording all of them as individual chapters and putting them up as small audio files, I have decided to group 4 to 5 chapters together so as to it clocking at about, I would say, half an hour to 45 minutes. This, of course, would not have been possible without the author granting me permission, for which I am immensely grateful as always. Enough of my rambling here, and let's proceed. Chapter 2. Bartender. This was objectively the best bartending gig he had ever booked. All-star weekend, 5-star hotel, unlimited expense accounts. By the time Friday night hit, Theo already knew 2 things for certain. 1. All-star weekend was going to be hell on his feet. 2. It was absolutely worth it. The hotel bar was packed in that particular way only expensive places ever caught. Men in tailored suits, pretending they weren't staring. Women in dresses sharp enough to cut glass. Agents hovering like anxious birds. Theo wiped down the counter for the 5th time in as many minutes, straightened the garnish tray, and reminded himself to breathe. He had picked up this shift for the money, obviously. The tip potential alone was obscene. But if he was being honest, just a little, it was also for Max. Max, his boyfriend of 3 years, the love of his life, and devoted hockey nerd. He didn't even watch hockey himself, but Max did, religiously, which meant he, by association, knew the names, the rivalries, the basic rules. He had absorbed most of his knowledge through osmosis. Late night games playing in the background. Max yelling at the television. Detailed rants about rivalries delivered while Theo brushed his teeth. What he cared about were the players. Specifically, the very attractive men skating around at high speeds. They had once, drunk and delighted, started their very serious, very scientific, cutest hockey players list, which meant that when 2 men sat down at his bar, Max and Theo number 1, number 2 picks, he nearly short-circuited. He did not stare professionally, but he noticed. They arrived separately, which was normal enough. The first one, blonde, sharp grin, broad shoulders, moving through the bar like he owned the space, even in his Hawaiian shirt. People turned. Heads followed. Theo clocked him immediately and had to physically restrain himself from texting Max, "Guess who is sitting at my bar right now," in all caps. Then the other one arrived. Tall, dark hair, quite in a way that drew attention instead of deflecting it. He hesitated for just a second before sitting two stools away. Like proximity itself was a calculated risk. They did not greet each other, which was weird. Theo poured drinks, listened, observed, tried unsuccessfully to remember their names. He had excellent gaydar, not in the every man with good hair is gay way. No, this was honed through years of experience, pattern recognition, and surviving multiple brunches with Max's friend group. His gaydar was usually impeccable, and this was loud. Not in a flashy way, in a quiet, electric, don't touch me like that in public way. They talked, but not like strangers. Not like rivals, either. There was a carefulness to it, a threading of conversation that suggested shared history. The dark-haired one leaned in when he laughed, shoulder angling just slightly closer. The blonde one mirrored him without seeming to realize it, knees turning in, posture softening. Theo slid two drinks toward them. Their hands brushed while they took their drinks. Not dramatically, not obviously, just enough. Neither of them pulled away quickly. Theo's soul briefly left his body. Okay, calm down. That meant nothing. Bars were crowded. Hands touched all the time. He was projecting. This was just two absurdly attractive men who hated each other for sport, like Max always said. He moved down the bar, served another customer, returned. They were closer now. Not by much. Half a stool, maybe. But Theo had spent enough time watching body language to know when gravity was involved. The dark-haired one said something low. The blonde one smiled, small, private, like the smile was meant for him alone. He kept glancing at the other's mouth like he had forgotten what conversation was for. Theo felt heat creep up his neck. Should he text Max? No, absolutely not. This was how rumors started. He wasn't outing anyone. And he had no proof. Just vibes. High quality vibes. Sure, but vibes nonetheless. He focused on polishing a glass. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw it. The dark-haired man reached out, fingers trailing across the back of the blonde man's hand. Just once. Like a test. Theo dropped the glass. It didn't break. Miracle of all miracles. But the sound echoed loud enough that both men looked up and separated quickly. Sorry, Theo blurted, mortified. Slippery. The dark-haired man nodded politely. The blonde one grinned like he knew exactly what had just happened and found it amusing. Theo retreated. He poured himself a glass of water, drank it too fast, reminded himself that he was a professional adult with a job and bills, and the two hockey players quietly flirting at his bar was not, in fact, his problem. They ordered another round. Theo delivered it without comment, eyes fixed firmly on the counter. Their knees touched. They did not move them apart. Theo stared at the liquor shelf like it might offer guidance. "Do not text Max," he told himself. "Do not text Max. Do not text Max." The dark-haired one laughed suddenly, discreet but delighted, and leaned into the blonde man's space. The blonde man responded without hesitation, hand coming up to steady him by the waist. For just a second. By the waist. Theo made a strangled noise that he passed off as a cough and turned away before he could witness anything else. This was too much. This was intimate. This was hands on hips at a public bar. Energy. This was not a rivalry. This was foreplay. He busied himself with the far end of the bar, desperately avoiding eye contact. He could feel the tension radiating off them like heat, curling around his spine, making his ears burn. If they needed another round, they could wave. His phone buzzed. "Max, so tell me everything." Theo stared at the screen. He typed, deleted, typed again. "Theo, I cannot. Ethically, emotionally, spiritually. Max. Question mark, question mark, question mark." Theo locked his phone and pressed his forehead to the cool marble of the bar. Some secrets, he decided, were above his pay grade. He hoped they tipped well. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Housekeeper. Meredith liked order. She liked clean lines, tucked sheets. Carts stocked exactly the same way every morning. She liked knowing what a room should look like when she opened the door. People passed through, but the rules stayed the same. Check in, check out. Dirty, then clean. She didn't need to know anyone's story to do her job well. Only whether they wanted fresh towels or extra pillows. Still, after 12 years in housekeeping, you learn to read the signs. Room 2481 had been booked for one guest. Montreal team. 4 nights. Meredith checked her clipboard twice before knocking. No answer. The Do Not Disturb sign hung from the handle again, just like yesterday. It had barely moved since the first night. The rules are clear. She still needed to change the towels after 2 days. She hesitated, then unlocked the door with her key card, pushing her cart inside. The room smelled faintly of coffee, cologne, and something warmer underneath. Lived in. Not messy. Not careless. Just used. She started with the bathroom. Meredith paused. 2 toothbrushes in the cup. 1 blue, 1 white. One is still damp with a trace of toothpaste on the side. 1 carefully rinsed and with a head cover on. That happened sometimes. Guests forgot things. Lovers visited. It wasn't her business. Still, she moved on. On the desk, room service had left a tray, one dessert plate, two forks. Meredith shook her head softly and gathered the dishes. She didn't judge. She had seen everything in this job. Discretion was part of the uniform. She worked quickly, efficiently, resetting the room to neutral. New towels, fresh sheets. The bed was the next giveaway. One bed, king-sized, sheets almost on the floor. Pillows mismatched. One on the floor, one propped against the headboard. Meredith smiled despite herself. She stripped the bed with practiced movements, folding as she went. There were faint creases where bodies had lain close. While making the bed, a scrap of paper fell on the floor. She hesitated. She wasn't supposed to touch personal items. But she still picked it up. It wasn't a note, just a list. Handwritten, blocky letters. Coffee, keys, passport. Don't forget me. Smiley face. She folded it back exactly as she had found it and set it down on the side table, heart suddenly very full. She was pushing her cart back into the hallway when the elevator dinged. The doors opened. The man stepped out with an expression Meredith didn't usually see on guests. He was smiling. Not the polite smile people gave the staff. Not the tired one after a long night. This was private, soft, like something had gone right and he was still carrying it with him. He walked past her without noticing. Phone pressed to his ear. "Yeah," he said quietly. "I'll be back later." She caught just a hint of an accent. Canadian, maybe. And something else underneath. Fondness. Meredith watched him disappear down the hall. Yesterday morning, she was certain it had been a different man leaving the room. Taller, heavier accent. Russian, she thought, though she couldn't say exactly. He had been laughing into his phone, unconcerned with who might hear. Two men, one room, one booking. Ah. She pushed her cart toward the vending machines, humming softly to herself. Young love always leaves traces behind. The next morning, it was checkout. Room 2481 was quiet when she entered. The bed was neatly made this time, almost too neat. The bathroom counter was wiped clean. Toothbrushes were gone. The Do Not Disturb sign lay on the desk. She picked it up and placed it back where it belonged. She hoped, wherever they were going next, they'd find another room. One with enough space for two. End of chapter 3. Chapter 4. Airplane Seatmate. Marianne liked early flights, aisle seats, and reports finished before takeoff. She liked boarding groups that moved when instructed, and overhead bins that closed properly on the first try. At 50, she had learned that the secret to peace was preparation, and the secret to preparation was never, ever trusting airline Wi-Fi unless you absolutely had to. Which was why, by the time the plane leveled off, she was already 3 pages deep into her report and blissfully ignoring the mild turbulence. She tried to finish fast. She barely noticed her seatmate at first, He was young, with dark hair, athletic build, and absurdly handsome in that unfair way. He boarded late, apologized quietly as he slid into the window seat, and immediately pulled out his phone like it was a lifeline. Marianne clocked that, but didn't dwell on it. People are attached to their devices these days. She was attached to results. She finished her report just as the flight attendants dimmed the cabin lights. Satisfied, she closed her laptop, leaned back, and stretched her fingers. Time for a break. She let her gaze wander, not stare, mind you, just drift politely around the cabin. The woman across the aisle had already fallen asleep. Someone behind her was snoring aggressively. The seatbelt sign dinged. Then, a sound. Not loud, not disruptive, just a soft, surprised little laugh. Marianne's attention snagged. Her seatmate was smiling at his phone. Not a polite smile, not a work smile. This was fond, almost disbelieving, like whatever he was reading had caught him off guard in the best possible way. Marianne was not proud of what happened next. Curiosity was her greatest vice. She glanced, discreetly, professionally, the way one glanced at headlines on a newspaper without reading the article. The name at the top of the screen was impossible to miss. Lily, red heart emoji. Ah, that explained the airplane Wi-Fi. Marianne had opinions about people who paid for airplane Wi-Fi for non-work reasons, but she kept them to herself. Love made people do financially irresponsible things. She had once paid for international roaming just to argue with her ex-husband. The message preview popped up. Lily, did you survive the airport? Or security confiscate your dignity again? Marianne pressed her lips together. She liked Lily already. Her seatmate typed back, thumbs moving fast, smile widening. He tilted the screen slightly away, but not enough to block the view entirely. Marianne looked away. She was curious, not rude. Just a woman who enjoyed harmless gossip she had never repeat. Still, she could hear the soft taps of typing, the occasional amused exhale. It was impossible not to notice how invested he was. People didn't smile like that at small talk. Another message came in. Lily, also important question, what are you wearing right now? Marianne choked on her water. She will not look again this time. She did, however, notice when her seatmate froze. Completely still, shoulders locked, smile wiped clean off his face, like someone had hit a switch. Then, a noise. A strangled, panicked sound, halfway between a laugh and a cough. Against her better judgment, Marianne flicked her eyes sideways just as his phone betrayed him. It was only a split second. Long enough. Oh dear. She saw skin. She saw framing that suggested intent. She saw enough to immediately and decisively regret every life choice that had led her to this moment. The phone was slapped face down onto the tray table so hard it rattled. They locked eyes. There was a beat of mutual horror. Then they both looked away at the exact same time, like well-trained participants in a social contract neither of them had signed up for. Marianne stared very intently at the seat back in front of her. Her seatmate sat ramrod straight, ears turning an impressive shade of red. Neither of them moved. Neither of them breathed. Finally, Marianne cleared her throat, softly, carefully, like she was approaching a wild animal. "Airplane Wi-Fi," she said mildly. "Dangerous thing." He let out a weak laugh. "Yeah." Silence. He picked up his phone again, slowly this time, and slid it into the seat pocket like it might explode. Marianne nodded approvingly. "Good idea." The rest of the flight passed in excruciating politeness. They did not speak again. They did not look at each other. They existed in adjacent spaces, united only by shared trauma and the low hum of the engines. Halfway through the flight, his phone buzzed again. He did not check it. Marianne almost admired his restraint. As the plane began its descent, she gathered her things and stood as soon as the seatbelt sign chimed off. He followed suit, still avoiding eye contact. At the door, she paused. "Tell Lily," she said, without looking at him, "that airplane mode is there for a reason." He laughed, really this time, but still shy. "I will, I promise." She smiled to herself as she stepped out and blushed again. Curiosity, she reflected, always came with consequences. End of chapter 4. Chapter 5. Dog Walker. Camille walked her dogs every morning at 6:30. Not because she was a morning person, she absolutely was not, but because Mario and Zelda were tiny demons who believed sunrise was the perfect time for a nice walk. Also, because Montreal mornings were quieter then, and she liked pretending the city belonged to her for half an hour before going to work. Her two dachshunds, with no concept of personal space or urgency, trotted ahead of her, leashes tangled every few seconds. Camille sighed, untwisted them with practice hands, and glanced up at the apartment building across the street. He was leaving again. She tried not to stare. She really did. But it was hard not to notice Ilya Rozanov when he exited a building like he owned the block, hood up, headphones in, looking deeply pleased with himself for reasons that felt none of her business and yet extremely fascinating. She had been seeing him come and go for years now, always when Boston was in town, always from the same building, always alone. Which was weird. Hockey players stayed in hotels. Everyone knew that, especially visiting captains. And yet here he was, slipping out of an apartment building like it was his. Camille adjusted her grip on the leashes and pretended to be very interested in her dogs. She was a hockey fan, like a fan, born and raised. You didn't grow up in Canada without picking a team early and defending it forever. Hers was Montreal, no contest. Her favorite player was Shane Hollander. This was important, which was why she had, on multiple occasions, deliberately not asked Rozanov for an autograph. It wasn't that she didn't want one. It was that loyalty mattered. You didn't casually chat up the captain of Boston when your heart belonged to Montreal. Even if he did have a stupidly nice smile and was a very good player. Sorry, Shane. She watched him head down the street, dogs pulling her along behind him, whether she wanted to follow or not. Don't, she whispered to them. We are not following him. We are normal. Mario sneezed. Zelda attempted to eat a leaf. But this morning, someone came running after him. Wait, you forgot this? She gasped, an actual audible gasp. One of those embarrassing little inhales. Shane Hollander was jogging down the street, hair a mess, sweatpants riding low on his hips, expression focused. Camille's brain blue-screened. She dove behind a trash can, heart pounding. Daxoon's confused and offended. I know, she hissed. I know this is weird. Just trust me. Shane held up something small in his hand. Keys, maybe. Or a phone. Something important enough that Rozanov immediately jogged back towards him. Shane reached Rozanov, breathless and smiling. Not the press smile. Not the game face. This one was soft. Almost shy. Oh, Rozanov said. And laughed.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Shane handed it over, fingers lingering just a beat too long. Camille's heart was pounding so hard she was convinced they could hear it. They stood there, talking quietly. Rozanov said something that made Shane snort. They were standing too close. Not touching, but close. The kind of close that didn't happen by accident. She peeked over the trash can. Shane smiled again. It was the smile he wore in post-game interviews when he was trying not to say too much. The one Camille had watched on replay more times than she would ever admit. Oh my God, she whispered. After a moment, footsteps moved away. She waited, counted to 10, to 20, to 30. Then she peeked again. Shane disappeared through the front doors. Rozanov rounded the corner of the street. Camille slid down onto the sidewalk, sitting hard. Her dogs immediately climbed into her lap, delighted. No, she said faintly. No, 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 no. This was not possible. Boston's captain and Montreal's golden boy did not sneak around together like characters in a romance book. Except, apparently they did. Camille stayed there for a long moment, staring at the building like it might offer answers. Then she stood up, brushed herself off, and started walking again. Maybe that means she could cheer for Boston's captain. Just a little, in very specific circumstances. Not against Montreal, obviously. She wasn't a traitor. She smiled despite herself and tugged gently on the leashes. Come on, she told her dogs. We have a secret now. Mario wagged his tail and Zelda barked like they agreed. End of chapter 5.